Master gunsmith Robert Tilney, whose firearms business has been in the family since the 1860s, is also an expert on the Antiques Roadshow, covering both ordnance and war medals. I met him at his workshop in the very busy centre of Beccles.
Could you tell me about the business, what it's about, what it entails?
Right, well, give the history of the business first. It was set up by my great-grandfather, the original Robert Tilney, in 1860. It was an existing gunsmith shop owned by a chap called John Easter. The reason I know that is I was doing a bit of restoration work, found a piece of timber with John Easter gunmaker written on it that was holding up a shelf. Then there was Harry, then Lindsay, and now me. So I'm fourth generation. We're working gunsmiths. We repair, buy, sell, restore, research. Essentially, if it goes bang, I'm interested in it.
And how much of that do you do yourself?
All of it. The exception of specialist stuff like barrel work, which goes away to the trade in Birmingham.
You're a long-standing organisation?
Oh, well, yeah. I said we've been actually going since 1860, so quick bit of maths, 160 years.
And what would be a typical day for you?
Well, it depends. This morning, a gentleman came in who is giving up shooting, wanted me to give you a valuation on his gun. It was an English gun. With the current market, it's a side-by-side, so one barrel is next to the other. Nowadays, people want them the other way around, one barrel above the other and over and under. And I had to break it to him that I'm afraid the market's flooded with them. If you popped into auction, £80 to £100. And he said, well, I thought it was going to be that, but I just wanted to check. But the nice side is he's got somebody who's interested in it, so that will keep shooting. But that particular gun, it was by Cogswell & Harrison, London maker, and I got the serial numbers, so that was built in 1899.
That's nice.
And it's still going strong. So that was that. The day before, a chap came in with a Pinfire Lafosse shotgun out of Germany. That was 1840-odd. So that was a nice thing to look at. He just wanted some information on it. So we get that. People come and buy it. It's nice because you never know what's going to happen.
It seems to cover a wide range of things.
Yeah, I do my best. Yeah.
And do people change guns regularly?
Some people do, some people don't. The thing with a shotgun, or a rifle for that matter, they're not white goods. You buy a washing machine, if you're lucky, it'll last for 5 years. Built-in obsolescence. And we have to explain to people who are sort of starting shooting, guns just don't work like that. They will go on for a long, long, long time. One of my own personal guns is a flintlock shotgun that was built by a chap called Wogden in 1780. 1780, it still works. It's fabulous. It's the most elegant-looking thing. And you've got a real connection going back that long. Because in 1780, somebody was shooting it. And now in 2020, somebody's still shooting it. It's a fabulous sense of history.
I think I read that you have some of the equipment that your forebears used.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the original screwdrivers and turn screws are that which certainly Dad, most certainly Harry, and probably some of the really old ones Robert, my great-grandfather, would have used.
That's great.
So again, it's lovely. Yeah. You know, real sense of history.
Can you tell us something about the becoming an expert on
the Law Society?
The Law Society.
Yeah, I don't do so much of that now, but essentially I'm a ballistics expert. So we will get instructed by lawyers, solicitors, barristers, whatever, on shooting cases. And it could range from the something as low-key as the legality of an air rifle up to murder cases. And could that possibly have done that? Could this? Could that? So I've been doing that for, crikey, 20-odd years now. Last shooting one in terms of an injury was a chap who'd been shot on a grouse moor in the Borders. And that was an insurance one. Chap had been blinded in one eye. And that was to work out where the potential shot had come from. So that was reconstruction work and working out what was and wasn't possible. I've just finished doing one, a block valuation on guns that were erroneously destroyed. And so they wanted, that's a very long and complicated story. But essentially that was having to do that sight unseen. So we got the guns and they said, well, can you tell us what they're worth? I said, well, it's hugely difficult without seeing them, but what I can do, I can put a valuation on it and then explain why the valuation is there. So that was, I think that was about a couple of 3 months ago.
Are there times when there's no answer that you can give?
There's sometimes when it's so open to speculation. But as an expert witness, although I'm employed by a solicitor representing either the defence or the prosecution, I, as an expert witness, cannot take sides. The actual role of an expert witness is defined in law as being a person in court who can explain a specialist subject to the jury and magistrates or judges. That is all he does. I cannot skew my evidence one way or the other. Although I'm employed, I'm there to explain a situation to a lay person. And that's what we do. You know, we will say, that is what could or couldn't happen. So expert witnesses, although employed, are only there to aid the courts.
Tell me about the antiques roadshow.
Oh, well, that's great fun. I mean, I've just come back. I was in Ipswich on Wednesday, filming there, which is all a bit odd because we have to film under COVID regulations. The most important piece of kit we now have is a piece of plastic tubing that's 2 metres wide. You can't get any closer. I mean, we used to be filming on a table with a queue of people bringing their stuff in, and we chat to them and explain what it is and go on, and we might go and film something, and we can have 5,000 people milling about. I did a record down in Stoner Park about a month ago, and my audience, as opposed to 5,000 people strolling around, consisted of the camera crew, one person watching the chicken that came over to say hello. Because I couldn't quite work out why the cameraman wasn't filming me, and he went, oh, and there's a chicken. It's the oddest audience I've ever had.
Oh, was it fun doing it?
Oh, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that really is. On every show, you've got, because people tend to have the same things, they've got dad's medals and granddad's medals and great-granddad's medals. So we know we'll see quite a few of those. And people will often say to me, don't you get bored looking at the same set of medals? I said, well, no, because although the medals are the same, the story is always different. And it's the story that makes it interesting, especially with First World War medals. You tend to have, if you joined the war early, you had the 14 star, then you had the War Medal and the Victory Medal. The Victory Medal, they issued millions and millions and millions of them. But with the First World War medals, they've got who they were issued to engraved on them. Second World War ones don't. But the First World War ones, it then means you've got, I mean, a number of times people have said to me, what can you tell me about these medals? And the first thing I'll do is turn them over, get out the trusty Swiss Army knife with the magnifying glass. I can actually see what it says. and the number of times I will say, well, okay, these belong to Arthur Jones, who was in the Royal Horse Artillery. And they'll go, but that was my great-granddad. How do you know? You've not seen it's written on the medal. I've never seen that. I mean, people can have medals and they'll never look at them. It's just... But that's great because that is a direct tie-up. And I said, if you want to, you can start researching that. There are records out there, loads of great stuff on computers now, ancestry sites, and it's great. You can do a lot of research on that. And then every so often you will get, medal will come in, lady came in with a medal, single medal. They say, no, it's not worth very much. I don't know. I said, well, you know what it is? No. And it was a military medal. So this is a bravery award, First World War. Said, in that sort of condition, it's worth about £1,000. So that was great. I mean, you can get some really fun things. We had a chap turned up with, I mean, obviously my favourite guns. And he got some guns. He said, look, I've brought these along. He said, I know they're not very good, but I'd just like an opinion. I'd like to show somebody. I said, fine with me. You know, time spent looking at a gun is not time wasted in my book. And we went through, and I said, yeah, that was that one, that one, that one. Very nice. I said, that's interesting. I just said, tell me the story. And I don't know if you've ever heard of a television programme called Sharp. It's Bernard Cornwell wrote the books, and it was in a television thing. And it's about rifles, and they used a particular rifle called a Baker. And this is the Peninsular War and the Napoleonic Wars. So this chap said, well, I've always wanted a Baker. But I knew I could never afford one, so very valuable. And he said, this cropped up at a local auction. He said, it didn't sell. I found out who put it in and rang him and said, look, you put the bait. Yes, yes, yes. He said, I'd like to buy it. And the chap said, well, yep, fine, and sold it to him. So I said, well, that's a fabulous story. I'm so glad you got it. It's really nice. I said, what did you pay for it? He said, I paid £300 for it. So that's really nice. It's very, very good. It's worth the action a couple of times. I said, you do know it's real, don't you? He said, what? I said, this isn't a copy. It's a genuine Baker. I said, you've just bought a genuine Baker rifle for £300. Now put another nought on the end of it. I think that's the happiest man I've ever seen. But it's fabulous. What a fantastic thing.
Yeah. Now, I need to talk about the colour of your trousers.
Ah, yes, 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 yes.
I've come to the conclusion that you go to all these big castles and places, and if they wanted to find you, that's how they'd track you down.
That has been put forward. I mean, at one stage, somebody was giving directions and said, turn right at the bloke with the yellow trousers and you'll be there. No, I've just, in, I don't know if you've looked up on the Antiques Roadshow thing, it's what I do, and the last line has a penchant for brightly coloured trousers. I just like brightly coloured trousers.
That's fair.
Admittedly, I have had one or two comments by other experts, principally, my God, you're not going to film wearing those, are you, Bob? Yeah, but what was I wearing? I've been reliably informed the ones I was wearing yesterday were raspberry Kool-Aid.
Oh,
I think pink would work. Or, mm-hmm. I thought they were pink. Very apparently nice. They're fuchsia. We like the bright trousers.
Can I just ask you, have you got plans for the next family apprentice?
Well, I mean, I've got no children. I have a nephew, but works in a completely different line of business. He's television advertising, stuff like that. But if he gets bored, he's welcome. But as it is, I shall simply struggle along, as I have done for years and years and years. Because I think you probably gathered I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, I did just notice
that. Yeah, there's a little hint there, wasn't there? Yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, you get up in the morning to go and do something you really, really enjoy. And it's fab.
I was talking to Master Gunsmith Robert Tilney.